Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Hooked, the podcast where we give you all the plot hooks that you'll ever need in every role-playing game that you'll ever play ever. I'm Zancy Weber, your host here this evening, here with my two fellow hosts.
Hello, it's me, Jonathan.
And
what's up, geeks and gamers? It's your bitch, Dom Guilfoyle.
It's our bitch, Dom Guilfoyle.
That's right.
The people's bitch.
And what we do here is we give you some plot hooks for your role-playing games by taking inspiration from a Magic the Gathering card and a random word, and then presenting it to you in the form of a magic trick, starting out with a pledge, which is the seed of the idea, the turn in which we name it and turn it into something a little bit more interesting, something that is a bit more substantial that your players might actually enjoy playing with. And then in the prestige, we explore how we could put it into a campaign and how it might work in a game setting.
Now, before we do anything, I do have to ask a question, because I feel I just have... I don't know you two that well. Y'all have known each other for so long, and
You never ask questions.
Yes. I'm much newer to... I'm filled with curiosity today.
Just today, though.
Only today.
Because usually, you're really bad at asking.
Only in the last 5 minutes have I been filled with curiosity.
It's only just occurred to me that Zane and I have actually kind of known each other for a long time at this point.
Yeah.
We've only actually, gotten to know each other in the last few years, but we definitely were, in the same room as far back as, 2013.
Yeah, it's
we've only actually gotten to know each other in the last 3 years, though, is the weird part.
Wait,
I'm
so do I
geriatric?
I don't know you that well, so
no.
What?
Well, no, I was going to say, have I known Zane, heavily interacted with Zane for longer than you? Because Zane and I first, but it was end of 2017, I think. So no,
definitely not.
I fucked up timing. Yeah. I don't know how time passes. That's my getting
pretty
to know
regularly.
You question.
How does time pass?
No. I have a question for you about your D&D characters, which is, do you have a particular character trope or type that you fall back on regularly while you're making them? And what is it, if that's the case?
What? Okay. Are you talking about a kind of character that I like to play, or a kind of character that I find myself playing?
That's a good question. What's the thing that you like to play? What's the thing that you just chuck in there for fun sometimes?
I mean, I like to play control-y characters.
Okay.
So, control the battlefield, or buffy heal rather than punchy damage-dealing characters.
And what about character-wise, in the personality?
See, again, I always end up playing a face.
Yeah.
That's just my personality. Because when people start making poor decisions, I'll say, hey, that's a poor decision. Let me talk to this barkeep and convince them to do what I want them to do. And that can get real boring because I always feel responsible.
Yeah. I understand fully.
Yeah.
I tend to wind up playing characters who every few sessions will probably start combat mid conversation. It's just we're having a conversation, I just kind of think for a bit and go, I'm gonna cast Fireball.
Yeah.
And it's not even me being a shit or trying to ruin things. It's just I play characters who are they tend to be impulsive, or at the very least either impulsive or calculating to the point where that they will just...
They're waiting for that trigger, and then as soon as it's clicked.
Yeah, or even if they think it's about to click, I'll draw first.
Mm.
Yeah. And even very rarely is it because they're a bad person or something. It's just the way my mind works. It's just well, why would I wait for everyone to just be all right, we're going to fight, let's do it. I'm just going to be this is going to end up in a fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've walked down this road before.
Yeah, last session of the 5e campaign. campaign I'm in, like, one of the last things that happened was that it was just, like, a character who had was basically spreading kind of, a sort of a plague, a were-rat plague, anyway, turning people, where people would turn into were-rats, you know, normal stuff.
Yeah, a totally normal one.
I think that, or maybe it was just that she was a were-rat and she was spreading, like, bubonic plague or something. But anyway, she was, like, kind of, like, not super, like, apologetic about it. Like, she'd gone from one town to another and just, like, she was going to keep moving because, like, it's, like, Imperial soldiers had arrived in the town. And she was just, like, she just jumped out a window next to me and another character and was like, I'm leaving and you should too. And she runs off and I'm just like, yeah, no, I shoot her in the back with my gun. Yeah. just thinking about it, it's just like, no, my character would put a stop to this fucking Typhoid Mary. Yeah, just like, it was, and I don't think I'm being, like, the trigger-happy warlock. I'm just like, why wouldn't I put her down?
Yeah.
I think that's a distinct difference in our playstyle, is I'm always waiting for someone else to throw the first punch.
I really like playing characters that are, like, on the two extremes of bravery. So I either play fighters who are, like, foolhardily brave and constantly getting into terrible situations because of this. Often it's a barbarian, actually. Or I like to play someone who just avoids fights at all costs. And that doesn't actually have to do with cowardice. My most current one is a fighter who's a bugbear battle master who I've given Polearm Master and Sentinel. I've made him, like, hyper competent at combat.
Yeah.
And he kills people from 15 feet
yes,
away?
Yeah. But he,
munchkin.
But he fucking hates... He doesn't like fighting. Like, the premise is he's, like, a 45-year-old retired dad. Yeah, right. He used to be a soldier. He's like, I don't want to be here anymore. So I like playing this supremely competent person who just does not want to get it. The other one I mean,
I've played a character that's simultaneously both.
Yeah.
So a sorcerer who doesn't want to fight. He doesn't never wants to kill anyone.
Yeah.
But, like, he owes people his life. So, like, if they're in a dire situation, he's like, oh, I've got to do it. And he just throws himself... into the fight.
So I played a kobold artificer armorer. Her name was Taffy. I loved her, but I had it fully that she was, when she was out of her suit of armor, she was terrified of everything, had major anxiety, like did not want to be in any situation. And then she put on the armor, which was like the size of a dragonborn. She just grew and was suddenly basically a superhero, being like, all right, let's go. Yeah. But ironically, the first person that I killed was this Taffy on an impulse reaction going, oh no, and just brained a guy by accident. It's like, he was a villain.
That's same as how my first kill.
Oh yeah.
How many villagers have you accidentally killed in your role-playing
No,
life?
He was a mayor.
Oh, in role-playing, yeah, right.
No villagers.
Okay, interesting.
This guy was the mayor.
Let's just say commoners, then.
He turned his entire town into zombies. I don't know.
Did he have class levels?
No, I didn't know that.
Okay, so you've got one.
I got one.
You've got one.
Tom, how many you got?
How many villagers have I killed?
Yeah.
In this current campaign? I'm not a murder hobo, so none.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I think the only commoner kills I have under my belt are when the bad guy has put commoners between me and them, and I've, like, you're literally killing hundreds of thousands of people. Mm. Another 20 to end it is fine.
Yeah, 100%.
In, like, I don't go for random commoners, but in the most recent session, again, I did do a let's you and him fight between some pirates who had something that we wanted and some Imperial guards that were nearby. All the pirates rushed downstairs into the cellar of the tower. And all of these the Imperial guardsmen were upstairs searching for someone, and, like, the pirate leader had a pet monkey who had, like, the crystal portent gem we needed stuck inside its head, basically. And so I used dissonant whispers, like, suddenly was down there and just like, hey guys, just checking on things, and then used dissonant whispers on the monkey. With dissonant whispers, only the target can hear what I'm doing, so I kill this monkey by making it scream itself to death, and then I just, like, slip out through the fucking cellar exit, put a broomstick through the doors, and it's just like, well, that'll sort itself out one way or another.
A problem solved.
Yep. And that's how that session ended.
Okay. Well, now that we know each other so much better, let's move on to this week's hooks, shall we? So we are taking inspiration from a Magical Gathering card called Alchemist Refuge. It's by Dan Scott. And who wants to describe what we're looking at here?
It's hard to tell the scale, but what I think it is, it's a fairly standard-sized forest with a really tiny hut in it. Like, at first glance, you think, oh, these are colossal trees with a normal hut in it with some, like, glowing contraption and such. But then there's a bon- there's a fire next to it, and when you look at the scale of the fire, it looks like a normal campfire. So actually, this is a tiny, tiny hut.
I think even next to the campfire, the trees are they're big trees, but they're not like giant.
No,
giant
these are just
trees.
Like oak trees with a tiny hut.
Yeah,
yeah.
I said the word "the borrowers" is like a reference as soon as I saw it.
Or just like it's like pixie size, maybe that sort of thing. Yeah.
And so there's like a blue glow, and there's some sort of contraption aerial kind of thing sticking out of the top.
It's an antenna, you know.
It's in contraption a lot today. We have, as a group.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I guess I'll stop.
No, it's just an observation.
It's a good word.
Stop with this
fucking guy. It's a really good word.
And the flavor text says, persecuted alchemists fled deep into Kessig's wilds, seeking solitude to continue their ghoulish craft. So,
well, that's just made it a much darker tone, hasn't it?
I mean, did you not get evil out of that?
No, I thought it was just like a nice little
you can you can be nice. You didn't have to put evil into it.
I'm often quite nice.
It is.
I'm very modest about it.
It's interesting to refer to alchemy as ghoulish.
Mm.
I think perhaps in this particular lore, perhaps maybe alchemy is tied with necromancy.
Yeah, sure. Yep. I don't know. Yeah, the
who
MTG
knows?
Lore too
it's
well.
It's a colorless land, so
yeah. That's true. Who wants to go first?
I want you to go first.
You want me to go first?
I want you to go first.
I can go first.
Please.
So the players, stop me if you've heard this before, are walking in the woods.
Okay.
When suddenly a house appears just absolutely out of nowhere. Just zoop, it's there. That's the sound effect that goes with it as well.
Okay.
Like a zoop.
Cool.
Zoop.
A furious alchemist wearing a tiny little hat storms out of the house, looks at it, looks at the players, with a big old frown, just goes, how tall are you?
Oh, yeah.
They answer, I assume. He swears to himself, storms back into the house and slams the door.
Okay.
That's my turn.
All right. Yeah. No, that's your pledge.
My pledge. Shit.
Yep.
Did we give the word as well? The word is fluctuation? I'm not sure.
The word is fluctuation. I think I did. Maybe I didn't, but the word is fluctuation.
Either way, I'd forgotten it, so maybe the listener had to.
The fluctuating contraption.
Yay.
Okay, I can go next if you would like, Dom.
Yeah, go on.
My pledge is going to be an NPC. And this is I think this is set in an ultra low magic campaign where someone says they can talk to the trees, you look at them like, okay, granddad.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go home and check that mum hasn't put anything in your porridge.
Or maybe that she has been remembering to put the stuff in your porridge that keeps you from saying this shit.
Yeah, and so I think this takes place kind of, there's a giant forest that is full of old growth trees like this. And there is just a little old man that has built his house just like this into one of the trees and says he can talk to the trees. And this forest is so big that like there are multiple settlements around the outskirts of it that kind of routinely log it. For wood, and that's no real problem, but it's a couple days trek to get anywhere. And this guy will probably start giving intel to the players about things that are going on that need to be dealt with, and like will help them in their thing. So like maybe there's a gang of bandits or someone who's destroying trees in inland, and that's the pledge. So super low magic campaign. This little guy says he can talk to trees and is giving you intel that maybe he can, or maybe he just is exploring the woods and finds these things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So for my pledge, we have a community that previously was fairly unremarkable, but they had alchemists and potion makers there before, have suddenly become a powerhouse of potion makers. Like they are creating the most remarkable shit, and nobody's quite sure what's changed. And the party are hired by a rival potion making tycoon, I guess, to do some corporate espionage and find out what the secret is. And that's my pledge.
Nice. So
there's an organization, a community of potion makers and alchemists whose product has suddenly started becoming the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And a bigger rival who's like, how are they beating us, wants you to find your party to find out how.
Right. So investigation, not sabotage.
Investigation.
Just, yeah. Cool. Awesome. Okay. Well, let's go back to Jonathan for the turn.
So if the players knock on the door, I say if because they could totally just walk past them.
We could burn it down.
Would they jump immediately to burn it down, do you reckon?
They're in a forest.
Yeah, okay, fair. I'll accept that.
Just like the party sorcerer is just like, so what if I use the sorcerer ability to have fireballs not hurt party members? If I start a fire with that fireball, does the fire hurt my party members? Yep. And it's just like, hey, why are you asking that?
Yeah.
Why are you asking that question?
The rogue immediately jumps to trying to unlock the door despite the fact that it's not actually locked. The alchemist, now wearing a normal sized hat but a necklace that's clearly too tight around the neck, opens the door and immediately starts ranting to him. Basically goes, come in, and just starts ranting about all of his troubles, and he's a very grumpy man at this point. But the general thrust of the conversation is that he makes himself small for safety. Hard to find small things. This is a known fact. And something has been causing his magic to fluctuate and his incantations to just be so inconsistent. And he asks the players for help. I had to enter that I didn't get to write down, and so I just lost all momentum.
Okay, so he asked the players for help because his powers are fluctuating.
Yes.
For some reason.
Yes. And I'm really sorry for this name that I've created. It's, I think, maybe my worst one.
Okay, that's a big claim.
Honey, I Shrank the Chemist. That's it.
I mean, it's not great. I wouldn't say it's the worst.
What's my worst one?
I remember being more disgusted than I am now. Yeah. Like, maybe it's a relative term.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah.
Like, I think Fist is my pride and joy. No, Knuckle was what it was called. Knuckle is my pride and joy.
All right. Okay, so let's go back to mine. Mine is just the guy's name, and it's Toki Treeman, and he's called Toki, and he lives in the trees.
I like his name.
He's called Treeman.
Does he do a bit of a toke? Is that why?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. He's total kind of hippie gadgeteer kind of hermit, yeah, right. Lives in the woods, but like is fiddling with things. And I think the more you work with Toki, the more rewards he gives you. And he's kind of the sole proprietor of like things that are actually magical. Mm-hmm. And so you start to believe that he can talk to the trees, and that he can channel the trees' power. And that's kind of what he says that he's doing. Like he's talking to the forest, and the forest is like, there's like little entities in it, but also like the big entity of the forest. And you don't know whether that's like an old religion or anything, but you don't, it doesn't grok with anything that the party really knows. But they get these sweet, sweet weapons and tools and things made out of wood.
And Turkey's sweet leaf.
And of course, the drugs.
Yeah, the pipeweed.
The hobbit, the halfling pipeweed.
Yeah, exactly. The halfling pipeweed. And so they keep coming back, and they kind of, their power grows and their esteem grows with these gifts that Toki gives them and bestows upon them. And so that's kind of that's my turn. So they, what starts out as kind of a distrustful relationship, like weirdo in the woods, actually gets rewarded, and like he doesn't get any less weird, but like they form a kind of symbiotic relationship.
I think him getting less weird would ruin it. He has to stay bizarre.
He's got to stay weird.
Yeah.
Keep
Toki weird.
Dom?
So the party goes to...
This is the episode I should be being dunked on for. This of any of them.
Anyway, so the party treks to this community, and they find that, as was implied earlier, the secret is a closely kept secret. All of the potion making is done behind closed doors. Nobody outside of the community, the immediate community business knows how it's done, and nobody inside of it is willing to talk. So the party might be able to bribe or convince someone or blackmail someone to get them into one of the clean rooms where infiltrate the lab where they are making their amazingly potent potions. And what they find within is that these potion makers are, in some cases, they are shrinking down large ingredients and then using multiples of those. They have shrinking and growing technology is what they are using.
Interesting.
So they have like a full large fruit that has all of this magical property. They're shrinking it down so that they can use a whole one of it in a single potion, and some sort of magical chemical blah 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 means that it has all the potency of a large one, but you're eating just a single one. It retains that potency, and in some cases they're even shrinking their people down so that they can be much more precise in like the cuttings and that sort of thing of time. Like they're doing all of these, all of their secrets basically rely on this, these shrinking abilities that they have granted themselves.
Yeah.
And they have that, well, they have a, they, I think that it would be useful for the narrative for it to be a device maybe, so that it's something you can steal for your, for your employees, that sort of thing. So yeah.
And what are we calling it?
Microbiology.
Okay. Microbiology. All right. Well, let's get on to the prestige.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple ways you can take this, and I think this is where people realize I'm terrible at writing endings. So I just leave it open-ended and let people choose because that's who I am. I think you could put a time limit on this, which would be quite fun, which is if you take too long solving the mystery, enemies of the alchemist are going to find him, and you've got to deal with that problem and keep the alchemist alive, preferably.
That's you know why they're fluctuating?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay.
I think you get into it.
Are we allowed to know?
Yeah, I'm about to do it now.
Okay, cool.
I think you get into it and you discover that the part of the reason the chemist is the alchemist, I should specify, is in need of such protection of being kept small and hidden, is that his less than pleasant attitude has led to some rivalries forming with other alchemists in the region. And so, you know, in Witcher 3, there's a quest where you come across a house where just things are going badly, right? And you find nearby that someone has put a curse upon them. Yep. And you're like, well, shit, we got to go deal with that now. And you, I think it's one of those, you're like,
I just cleaned this curse. God damn
it. It's one of those ones where you go into the forest and you just find like an alchemist tincture of some kind that has been spread around the roots of a bunch of the trees.
Yeah.
And it's just creating this effect that's wrecking, it's disrupting him, right? And it becomes this game of simultaneously trying to track down the other alchemist and figure out how to stop all of this stuff, and also keeping the one that you want to help safe while he's fluctuating in size rapidly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Honey, I Shrank the Chemist.
Yep, you did. Okay. So on to mine, which is Toki Truman. Now, I think where Fluctuate comes into this is now that your party has like several of these items and several of these ties to Toki and the forest, whenever the forest is suffering, like if there's a forest fire or there's a massive logging operation or whatever, the power of these things drops down. And so when you go to say, ask Toki, why aren't these working anymore? You're like, well, the forest is under attack. And he says, well, I've been trying to figure out how to solve it, but I'm going to need you to help me and go to these places and do these specific rituals, and then they should be back up and running and the forest can take care of itself. Unfortunately, what's actually happening is Toki's going to awaken the forest.
I think I support Toki.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what this means is like this world didn't used to be low magic, but magic was banished and the spirits of these trees were just kind of left undisturbed to grow extremely powerful, and Toki's just giving them a way to connect and work. And so now there's this massive magical force that you're either going to work with if you're on Toki's side and you've got these great weapons, or you sacrifice the weapons and your ties to the forest and you go to finish this destructive force somehow. I really loved in, I believe it was in Hellboy and the Golden Army, which is not a great movie.
It's a fun movie.
Fun movie. The God of the Forest that was just like they just threw out. Was that in the first one?
That was in the second. It was an elemental.
An elemental.
It was the last elemental, and that's why the Blood Elf King was, or Prince or whatever, used that against Hellboy. Was just like, hey, like to like you're gonna have to put this thing down, and that was why it was an emotional.
Anymore.
It was an emotional thing because like Hellboy's like, I shouldn't destroy this beautiful thing, but I have to.
Yeah. And I really like that particular little conundrum.
Yep.
It's like, well, technically these things didn't do anything wrong, and technically we've been profiting from them for hundreds of years.
And like, what are the repercussions of if you stop them, right? Like,
yeah,
that world isn't going to keep going okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so I think that's the prestige is kind of, Toki has been doing these things and like there are our benefits, but then he's also like, hey, what if we just do this one final step? Everything will be better for the forest.
Yep. I kind of love that as well, because you can use that as like a really strong point in your campaign where you just take a hard shift.
Yeah.
And then like there are, you know, when you... campaigns, like, obviously on some podcasts where they take a hard shift and they change what system they use. Mm. And I think it's a really effective way of communicating that, like, no, this world's fundamentally changed.
Yeah,
We've got to change with it. We can't just approach it the same way, you know?
Yeah. All right, Dom. So, microbiology.
Yeah. So, again, going into that corporate espionage thing, this is a point where it becomes a bit of... I know it's weird to compare, like, a full-on RPG to just, like, a more limited game, but, like, I'm feeling a bit Deus Ex with this. Mm-hmm. Because, again, corporate espionage, obviously, and you have a few different ways. Like, the party will return to their employer, and your employer will say, it's just like, right, I want you, like either sabotage their production's prospect pipeline or bring it to us and bring their shrinking technology to us, or destroy it if you can't, or get their secrets, or do something to take them out of business. Like, I leave it in your hands. And the party can do that. There's a bunch of things they could, if they're a fucking murder hobos, they could kill some people, or they could kill the person who invented it so they can't recreate it, or they could just steal it, or they could align with the, like, if they talk to these to the people with the shrinking technology and let them know that there's a bigger fish trying to stomp them out, it's just like, well, how much would you pay us to
not do anything?
Yeah, to not do anything, or to
turn on them.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, what if, and then the interesting part for that is that when, like, you, oh, these are the underdogs, and we're trying to side with them over this evil corporation, the underdogs will be just like, all right, here's what we want you to do. We'll sabotage a shrink machine, and you bring it to them, and then when they try to turn on, it'll kill them all, and you go, oh, there's no good guys. And that, these are all just like options for, like, this is like a little mini sandbox, how do you solve this problem sort of thing.
What I really like about situations like this is how you can have, like, multiple win conditions, and you can, like, achieve more than one, and it's just a matter of, like, figuring out which ones your priorities are and which ones, letting the party decide, we're really good at talking to people, so let's talk to people, or we're really good at stealth, so let's stealth in.
And that's why the Deus Ex comparison.
But then also, like, morally, just like, what will your characters pick in this scenario?
What do you do when you realize there's no good guys?
Leave.
Or do you sabotage and then take the sabotage machine and just wipe everyone out?
Yeah. Scorched earth policy.
Is that the only moral thing to do?
Yeah.
Is genocide.
That's not genocide.
I mean,
that's just being a good person is taking down the corporations.
No, absolutely. If Fight Club has taught us anything,
it's technically not genocide. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the use of the word technically really reassures you on this one.
Yeah, my it's technically not genocide shirt is raising a lot of questions answered by my shirt. Also, I like the moral of Fight Club is that Tyler was right. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what everyone thinks is happening.
That's what a lot of certain type of person on the internet thinks it was about.
Okay, well, before we get too far down this rabbit hole, if you want to use any of these in your game, please do and let us know how it goes. We would love for you to use them and throw them at your players and, you know, let us know what your players choose to do in these very, these morally complex hooks that we've given you today.
I mean, yeah, I think we all wound up there. So I think it's because we all looked at the flavor text and was just like, oh, this is cute. Oh, wait.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Ghoulish? Oh, my expectations have been subverted by the moral ambiguity here, and we all just did that.
As always, Hooked is produced under a Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives, 4.0 international license, which means that you are free to share, redistribute the material in any medium or format if you give the appropriate credit. Do not use the material for commercial purposes, and don't remix, transform, or build the material in any way without asking us first. If you would like to submit your artwork to this podcast, please do so by reaching out on Twitter or Instagram, and you can also email us at podcast.hooked@gmail.com. All of those will be in the show notes. I've been Zane C. Weber here with
Dom Guilfoyle. I have a show called The Mistome Museum of Mystery, Morbidity and Mortality. It's an audio drama set in a creepy museum with some creepy stuff going on and also some funny stuff sometimes, but then it gets creepy again.
Also here was...
Hello, it's me, Jonathan. You can find me on Twitter at Pirate Killjoy, and you can find me at the wonderful podcast Razorloid, in which me and my partner go through and review every Vocaloid, and we will be getting back to that soon, hopefully.
Keep playing games, everyone.
Keep playing games.
Stop playing games. Stop it. Stop it.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum. Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.